Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, in studio here with Katie Thorson. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Sean.
So I'm an estate planning attorney, and I help people put together their affairs, help them understand what their finances are and organize them in a way that they can, number one, be aware of what's going on in their life, and number two, pass on the wealth that they've generated over a lifetime to whoever they want. Usually it's their kids, without government interference. So that's what we specialize in here at Deason, Garner, and Hanson. But what we talk about on this show is everything culturally that's going on in society and around the world, not because we're experts, but because it's a lot more fun than talking about death, dying, and taxes. So I've got Katie Thorson here. She is my neighbor down the road. And the reason that you're here, Katie, because I didn't tell you when I invited you.
You just, yeah.
What I alluded to something. Why do you think
you were talking
you're here?
About work. Kids and work.
Because we've gotten a little setup going on right now where my kids come every other day to clean the office, and including this studio that we're sitting in right now. And your kids come, along with some of my younger kids, on the off days, and they vacuum and they empty trashes. And I've been doing this. I've been having my kids do it. It's been going on, I think, 12 to 13 years now. I've had my first two oldest children pay for college and their own funding to go on LDS service missions, which cost $10,000, on their own by working either at home, landscaping at my house, or cleaning my office. And they're very conscientious, I would say even miserly, about the spending of the funds that they've earned during that period of time. And now your kids are participating in that. And I know your kids have a very detailed chore list at home. So tell me your thoughts on your kids doing this type of work. They ride their bikes down the canal and come to work every other day. How do they feel about it? And how do you feel about it?
I get mixed reactions from the kids. At first, they're really excited. They like the idea of potentially making some money and I think breaking away from home, not working under mom. But as they've continued, we come up against some struggles. They don't want to give up playtime. And so every once in a while, when it's time to go clean the office, I get a little pushback. But then I remind them that they agreed to this job, that they accepted the job, and that they needed to show up and perform as they've committed to do.
And the age range here, we're talking
a 12-year-old and 14-year-old boys.
And so, okay, let's back up a little bit. First of all, are you concerned about them commuting? It's probably a mile and a half from your house to the office. They travel along a fairly busy road. It's 6E. And then they have to cross a very busy road, which is 32nd Street, to get here. What's your thoughts on that? Is that good, bad, indifferent?
So probably about 2 years ago, if you asked me that, I'd say no way would I let my kids do that. Even my older kids, very protective, very limiting in letting them go beyond the borders of home and the street. And then I've read a few books that have opened my eyes to maybe the limits that I'm placing on my kids that keep them from having those experiences that will develop character, develop self-respect, and develop just empowerment within them. And so within the last couple of years, read a couple books, outstanding books that made me realize like my kids can ride, was it half a mile maybe? I think it's half a mile from
that
our house.
Give you what?
It gave me the well, first
peace of
it
mind
helped
to
me
allow that to happen.
Well, yeah, it helped me recognize like, oh, you're limiting your children. You're limiting them in their potential and in them developing strength and anti-fragility, right? Like making them stronger. And so when this opportunity came up, I said, yes, let's do it. And it's like, and they're gonna ride their bikes. We're not gonna drop them off. We're not gonna, you know, it would be easy. It's not a big deal to run them over by a car. But I knew throw them on their bikes, let them pedal their way half a mile to the office. And it's been great. I think they enjoy that. They're happy to get on their bikes. It's been a, it took some time for them to adjust to recognizing that, it's fine.
And when they started,
too.
It was literally 115 degrees out.
It was. It was really hard. As a mom, like, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. It's, I played outside in the summer all year long. So in the summer all year long, but they're fine. They're boys. They can pedal. It's the end of the day. They come home and they're still alive.
So one of the books is The Coddling of the American Mind. And it's great. You can get it on Audible. You can get it on Kindle. It's out there. It's by Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff. I don't know if I'm pronouncing Greg's last name correctly, but Jonathan Haidt is H-A-I-D-T. And Coddling of the American Mind talks about how helicopter parents are not just not achieving the protection that they think they are. They're detrimental on the impact of their child's growth or children's growth, because we need struggle as individuals in our lives to grow, and children particularly so. And by Absolutely. Being overly protective, we are hindering that growth. So some of the key concepts in there, I want to bring this up and see if any of these trigger some things that go on and you have implemented in your kids' lives. One is, the number one untruth is about fragility. What doesn't kill you makes you weaker is the headline here. And the authors argue that adversity and challenges are essential for growth and resilience. Overprotecting young people by shielding them from discomfort and difficult ideas is detrimental to their development.
Yeah.
We hear about that all the time, especially in the media, about the need for some sort of censorship on social media.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Well, my censorship with social media is my kids are not on it until
okay.
they've developed enough individually that they can face the crap that exists there on social media. So,
let's deconstruct a little bit what we mean by social media. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's Facebook.
Okay.
There's X, formerly known mm-hmm. as Twitter.
Instagram,
TikTok.
I don't know.
YouTube.
No. Yes, YouTube.
Although I don't know if that's as social as the others, because the others are more interactive, right?
Right. I mean,
but YouTube is certainly.
Yeah, you can get into the scrolling where it's just, where it's feeding you what you want to watch
yes.
based on what you're watching. So,
and the filtering that YouTube does, because YouTube has its own filters, you know, you could put it on mm-hmm. a filter where it's a strict filter or a moderate filter or unfiltered. That what they're filtering is more what we've come to know as hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And hate speech keeps getting this broader and broader definition, basically anything that makes somebody feel belittled.
Right.
And so that's being heavily censored, but there's a lot of pornographic material out there or blasphemous material, like
mm-hmm.
especially against Christianity and Judaism,
sure.
that doesn't seem to be filtered at all. If it is, I don't
right.
see it. I don't see the filters working very well. The logarithm's broken for those filters. So we don't trust those filters for social media. So we as parents have to actually parent.
Right, right.
You know, heaven forbid we actually take responsibility for what our kids are exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying you don't give them social media until what age?
So at 16.
Oh.
16 will
16,
be.
16 and then you just flip the switch and now
no,
they get it?
No, of course not. It's okay. not a flip the switch. It'll be a very slow introduction.
Do you see what, do you have like on your phone where you can monitor the pages that they visit and how long they're on those sites?
I don't have that. They don't have access to that on their phones. So I'm not monitoring that.
Okay. So what do they get at 16? Instagram?
They can ask me what they want and we'll talk about it.
Oh, so it's case by case.
For instance, well, and me as a parent, I've grown and developed and learned what's good and what's not. So for instance, my oldest started Instagram in junior high, probably 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
Big mistake. Was not helpful for her growth and development. And she is amazing. She's overcome a lot. But there were definitely, not that you know, we're talking about making our kids stronger. I think that we still need to be careful about the things that we are exposing. It's not, oh, well, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Let's throw the whole bucket on them.
Uh-huh.
It's a very...
There is that argument, right? If we protect mm-hmm. them against, you know, the things that are out there like mm-hmm. pornography and bad words and let's say the songs and lyrics that we think right. we find objectionable, then when they actually get out in the real world, they're just either going to go nuts and embrace it and right. lose all self-restraint, or they're going to shut down and go become little hermits.
So I feel at this point with our children, we're trying to teach them true principles. Principles that will help them understand what's good and what's bad, what's hurtful, what's helpful, so that when they are exposed to those things, they will have something to measure their response against and something to fall back on and to know.
So what's that measuring stick? How do they measure what's good and what's bad?
Well, in our family,
yeah.
we use the Bible, we use the Book of Mormon, we use Scripture, we use God.
Okay. So they compare it to Scripture?
Right. So in the Scriptures, we talk about chastity, right? So to me, pornography is directly correlated with chastity. And so we talk about...
Interesting, because, the Bible does talk about chastity. The Old Testament talks about it,
mm-hmm.
that you shouldn't commit adultery, right? But the right. New Testament talks about it with a bit more broad spectrum about what's unchaste. And... Do you want to hit that note, or you want me to?
Go ahead, John.
All right. So Christ says that anybody that looks upon a woman to lust after her commits adultery in their heart. So the law of Moses is not to commit adultery, but Christ's law is not to even look at a woman and lust after them. And what is pornography?
It's exactly right.
It's exactly yeah, that, right? So mm-hmm. Christ is saying, do not participate in viewing pornography, mm-hmm. or because that's the whole purpose of pornography, is to create that feeling of lust.
Right.
And so that's what Christ is preaching there. And boy, was he ahead of his time. Of mm-hmm. course, he's
yeah,
God.
Always.
So he gets that credit.
Yeah.
So that I think is so, so important, because we've now learned, and I don't know that this was as apparent maybe 20 years ago or 40 years ago, but that pornography is as addictive as any other substance out there.
And it's harmful to all relationships.
Yes.
It prevents you from creating relationships, maintaining relationships
healthy
with others.
Yes.
Healthy relationships that will last.
We have to take a break, but we will be back. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner in studio here with Katie Thorson. We're talking about taking responsibility for our children and our own actions. We talked a little bit about being a helicopter parent and how that's more detrimental than helpful, and we're trying yeah. to protect our kids. And the irony is, we only have our kids for 18 years, and then they have a whole lifetime, hopefully another 70 years outside of our home, that our parenting skills have to go into action, and they learn how to fend for themselves. So helicopter parenting actually puts weaker underdeveloped children out there in society to fend for themselves. And the society is becoming more and more not only wicked in the sense that there's greater access to bad things. We're going from anything from illicit relationships to guns to, you know, getting indoctrinated into some type of terrorist organization. Everything you have at your fingertips now in today's society, and we need to prepare our children to be able to think for themselves critically and to make good decisions when they step out of our homes and that protective bubble that we've created during their first 18 years of development. How do we do that?
Right. Well, yeah, it's got to be a graduated approach. So young children in the home, we're limiting social media. We're limiting, and in our home is a safe space that is full of good things that we want our kids to learn and to develop, because they do spend enough time outside of the home where they are exposed, right? So they're not completely sheltered, but we're managing or trying to pay attention to what they're being exposed to and when, because there's a lot of development in the brain that needs to happen in order for them to have appropriate responses to some of those stresses and some of those challenges so that they're prepared. We can't just throw them in the water and expect them to swim. We got to teach them.
Speaking of...
Or maybe you do. I was thrown in the pool at 8, and that's when I finally said, okay, I can swim.
When you learned how to
swim? But it was a long overdue learn to swim, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't being forced, and finally a big brother said, you're learning to swim, threw me in, and of course I swam. So it's a good example of... Eventually, we've got to get in the pool.
Yeah, you've got to actually get
some kids
into
might need to be
situations
thrown.
Where you're uncomfortable and it's a do or die type thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe not quite as literally as that,
right.
Do or die, but very much, I've got to figure this out and give them more and more opportunities to figure it out. Now, we talked about measuring sticks as to determine what is a good way to measure what's appropriate on social media. And you said the scriptures, they've been around for a long time and they're given to us by God. So I think they're a pretty good standard. I would agree with that. There's other standards that we've also been given, and they're internal. It's what we call the conscience, or from a more religious perspective, we call it the spirit. Either the Spirit of Christ, we call it the Holy Ghost. We can call it our moral compass.
Right.
And those things, we have these sensitivities within us. And as young children, we're more attuned to them. So let me give you an example. Speaking of being thrown in the pool, my son, he is 7, and he was swimming in the pool at a neighbor's pool a while ago, and he half-mooned one of his friends, right? So he said he didn't do a full moon, but he half-mooned him and then jumped in the pool, all right?
Okay.
And, you know, he's a boy. I get it. I'm not going to admit to anything here on the air, but I get the mooning aspect of it. It's funny.
It's a boy thing. Yeah.
It's a boy thing.
Yep.
So anyway, then his feelings got to him, and he started to feel guilty about right?
Yeah.
So he comes home, and he starts crying, and he's sobbing so much that he can't even talk. And he says, I've done something really bad, and I can't tell you, but you'll be mad. And so, of course, finally, you know, he's talking to both me and his mom. Only me, probably, because I was present while his mom was there. I'm sure he's only there to talk to his mom. But we finally get it out of him, what he's done. And he feels like he's irredeemable. And we say, it's okay. You know, that feeling that you felt, it's really important. It's just like the sensitivity that you have in your fingertips when you touch a stove. Mm-hmm. It's to warn you against bad things that can harm you. Now, fortunately, if you just tap that and it gives you a little burn, then you're not going to be seriously injured. And that's the case here. It gave you a little burn, right? So your body, any place that your swimming suit covers, private spots. Don't show them to other people. Don't let other people touch them. Those are private, sacred spots of your body. And that was God reminding you mm-hmm. not to treat lightly that area. So he says, well, I'm just so afraid that other people are going to find out that I've done that. And he's going to be known as a neighborhood mooner. And I said, well, it's okay. I'm pretty sure that some others have done that.
Well, now the whole town of Yuma knows. Yes. So that's great.
The whole town of Yuma, this is a worldwide podcast.
I'm sorry. Yes.
So we told him, listen, here's another thing that you got to learn. This is a very important lesson. It's so much more important what God thinks and what your parents and your family thinks than what society thinks. So we don't care what other people think. We do what's right regardless. Mm-hmm. And what's right sometimes requires coming clean and telling other people that may have been offended or may have been harmed from our actions and making it right.
Right.
That is part of being honest and the repentance process. And so we need to call so-and-so's mom and let them know that that happened at their pool. Mm-hmm. And of course, he goes through another series of
sobs, probably.
Yeah, sobs and crying. And then he says, okay, this is going to happen. And so we call and everything got resolved. But I think that is one of the things that actually holds us back from developing personally is our fear of society and what they're going to think about us, both mm-hmm. on doing what's right and yeah. being feared to be some goody two shoes or too straight laced, or the fear that we don't fit in mm-hmm. and not participating in activities that we know are wrong.
Yeah. And I feel like acceptable. That's always been throughout time. That's always been, we're always worried about what other people think, and social media has just amplified that to make it constant, nonstop for these kids
yeah.
who are on any kind of social media. They're constantly being told what they're doing is good, bad, wrong, right, and without a moral compass, without, you know, one guiding principle or truth. It's whatever the other kids are thinking is cool at the time, which there were a lot of things I thought were cool in high school that were not cool.
Yes. Right?
I mean...
Exactly. So, and society and the media in particular get it totally opposite as mm-hmm. far as what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. For example, we had this attack on Donald Trump with this lawsuit from Stormy Daniels. And so Stormy Daniels is a porn star. That's her claim to fame. She's a porn star. And the media takes this and says, okay, we're going to throw this out here against Trump because Trump's base is the Christian right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his base is Christian right. And so we're going to take what offends them and we're going to throw that out there and smear Trump with it. Now, with any other political candidate, that would have worked. But what ended up happening is I think the media stepped in it. They started to portray Stormy Daniels as this heroine for, you know, this feminist movement, right? That
right.
she was liberating both herself and she was a single mom that was supporting her children with her illicit job title. And they built her up so much that it was like, okay, what is it that you're saying that happened wrong here? And of course, Donald Trump being Donald Trump, he's not famous for being the moral standard
mm-hmm.
for our country. What he's held up as is having good policies, mm-hmm. but they never want to focus on the policies,
no.
right?
Mm-hmm.
They want to focus on whatever will detract from his base. And so they put that out there and she wins this lawsuit that I don't even know the lawsuit. Oh, was paying her off for not disclosing that they had sex. Mm. And it's not illegal to actually pay somebody not to bring up a story to the media, whether that story was true or not. A lot of people wouldn't want you even to claim that mm-hmm. that was true. And anyways, that came and it failed. But what resulted of it was a very big exposure of how backward the media is, because Stormy Daniels was portrayed to be the heroine here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the story that we want our kids to hear.
Right.
That going out there and selling, you know, in the sex trade is something that's a credible career to be in for yourself, to get rich, to get famous. That's not a
right.
good idea.
Right.
But a lot of people are being applauded for their ability to earn money this way.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're having people that have multiple relationships and have children out there from a ton of relationships. And on Mother's Day and Father's Day, they give a shout out to all of their baby mamas out there.
Right.
And
right.
It's like, that is not what we should be celebrating.
Right.
We should be celebrating fidelity. We should mm-hmm. be celebrating responsibility for
right.
the actions that you take. And
and the life you're creating.
The life you're creating. And mm-hmm. so that's a way of making sure that our kids, by individual parenting, understand that social standards are not the measuring stick
mm-hmm.
that we should use to determine whether or not something's appropriate.
Correct.
And it goes the other way, too, whether or not we do something right and uphold morality and say, you know what, I'm not going to have sex until I'm married.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because sex is something that results oftentimes in pregnancy, and that is a God-given power that we have been entrusted with, and it's the most sacred, holy power that there is, and we're going to play around with it because it's socially acceptable and make a mockery of this power that God's given us and not take responsibility for it because of a claim that we assert that is totally backwards, and that is, oh, what is it? Women's health,
reproductive rights.
Reproductive rights. Women's health care and reproductive rights is to kill off the fetus in your womb.
Right.
And that's absurd. Why don't we take responsibility for the action instead of trying to avoid responsibility for the action and mm-hmm. killing an innocent life?
Right.
Sorry, I'm doing too much of the talking here. Tell me some more about your kids and the parenting that you apply to them, specifically with the chores and how you help them mm-hmm. understand the importance of money and the value, so when they get out there, they don't just feel entitled to continue living off of mom and dad's finances or mm-hmm. having the government step in and support
right.
them.
Well, we're still in process, so I can't give any super great success stories, but we're still learning and growing along with our kids. But we've had chores from the beginning. From as very young children, they were always helping, whether it's just unloading the dishwasher, folding and putting away their clothes. There was always something that everybody could do. And we've gone through probably about every year, we have to change up our method and the way that we, our process, for multiple reasons, mostly because the kids grow and change.
But your kids have a clear understanding of what is expected.
Yes.
Right? That's the bedrock of where
Correct.
You start.
I'm a list maker.
The actual chores
mm-hmm.
change.
Yes.
But the foundation is mm-hmm. they understand that they're responsible for A, B, and C.
Yes. Yeah.
Stays.
I mean, before they could even read, they would have a flip chart with pictures.
Nice.
You know, a picture of your bed. And when it's completed, you can mark off, I made my bed. I got dressed. And it starts very simple. It's like, you're in charge of getting yourself dressed. I'm not in charge of that.
We have to take a break, but I want to come back and revisit this and how it relates to receiving an inheritance. And we'll talk about that after the break.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner. I'm an attorney. I do estate planning, but I like to talk about other things. In particular, what we need to do as parents, on this show rather, right now, what we need to do as parents to prepare our children to be successful as soon as they leave our home. Not once they get out of college or once they get that career that they've aspired to, but as soon as they leave the home so they can be on the right track to making good decisions. And so Katie Thorson is here in studio, and we're talking about what you do, and it's a work in progress is what I'm hearing.
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what I want to get to is a lot of my clients want me to draft an estate plan that will help kids that have made poor decisions throughout their life and constantly required more support and more, whether it's financial or coming back home and living at home or using their parents' funds to rent a house, to become responsible at the time they receive the inheritance. And it's an impossible task. I can't write a trust that will make a child become responsible at the time they receive their inheritance. If they haven't learned how to become responsible prior to that, then it's too late, unfortunately. So we can put some guardrails on how they receive their inheritance and time it and have it pour out over a period of time. We can even have somebody else in control of it. But the best option overall is to produce children throughout the time that they're with us in the home that are responsible adults that don't even need an inheritance. And that way, when they receive it, it's either icing on the cake that mm-hmm. they can go on to do good works with, or it's not going to be detrimental in the very least to them.
Yeah. So I think that comes down to requiring and expecting work and contributions of your children at home. For me growing up, it was very much, I was in a house of, we had 13 kids, and both my parents, and for a time we had a housekeeper because that's a lot of kids to have.
Nobody's going to argue with you on that.
Yeah. My poor mother, she was amazing, is amazing. But taught us a lot of really good, just taught us how to clean, taught us how to do our laundry, taught us how to iron. I remember one day I cleaned out the fridge and the kitchen just for fun. Because
how old were you?
I must have been 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so she's gone for the day and I've cleaned out the kitchen or the fridge. She comes home and I'm showing off the fridge and she's like, oh, good job. She's like, but you missed this and you need to do this and this. And so I was a little heartbroken for a minute, because I was expecting praise and just like, oh, you're amazing. Here's some money. But no, it was like, oh, good job. Next time. Don't forget to get this, this, and this.
Uh-huh.
She was very meticulous in teaching us how to properly clean things. And that's not easy to do with children. With my kids, we're cleaning. They're cleaning bathrooms. They're sweeping. They're vacuuming. They're mopping. And it would be better. It would be easier and more efficient if I just did it myself.
Right.
Or if I hired somebody. And actually, that's not even always the best option. But they don't do it the way I want to do it. And it takes them 10 times longer to do it than if I did it.
Yeah, so it's, we could hire somebody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we could do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do that. You choose the more difficult path of
absolutely
having your kids take responsibility
yeah.
for contributing to the right. family household maintenance.
Right. And, you know, it's fun to watch the light bulbs go off when I have one kid that mops the kitchen and he's like, this floor is so disgusting. And I'm like, well, if you know, when you spill something in the middle of the week, if you wipe it up, your job on Friday will be so much easier. And it's fantastic to see those light bulbs go on. Maybe
do they hold each other accountable too for like making messes that they
yep,
know that they're going to have to clean up or they have just taken care of that room?
The two boys that share a bathroom, they complain about whatever messes the other one made when they have to clean it.
Yeah.
So it helps them recognize too the impact that they're having on other people and to be more respectful of shared spaces.
And we call this accountability. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the biggest thing that is lacking in society today, and we're trying to compensate for it by greater levels of government interaction into the American family with censorship, with control over what food they get in the cafeterias. And I don't like government intrusion in my life at all.
Right.
I do like being in a country that's protected against foreign invasions. So I love that fact. And I love being in a country that protects my right to freedom of speech and to practice my religion and to gather with people that have like-minded ideas. And so all of the rights that are God-given, but also outlined in the Constitution, I enjoy those. And so I'm not saying that government has no role to play, but it is attempting to take over the parental duties, and it's doing a very poor job.
Right.
And it's because parents are failing. Mm-hmm. We as parents need to, number one, take accountability for our children's actions. It used to be that if I went home and I did something bad in school and was either suspended or needed my parent to go in and talk to the teacher, I was terrified.
Right.
Now, I have a lot of people that work in the administration in schools, and their parents are coming in and talking about lawyering up and suing the school anytime the school takes any disciplinary action.
Right. Yeah.
It's the complete opposite. The parents are enabling these children and all of the bad acts that they do instead of holding them accountable for the acts that they do. Now, we're talking about just the simple stuff back, you know, when they're young, doing chores, making their bed. Mm-hmm. But that builds on something much more important.
Right.
And that is being accountable as a citizen of our community to be productive and not to be entitled to be supported by the government.
Right. I think it develops some self-validation as they're learning and growing at home. They're accomplishing things that maybe they don't want to do or don't think they can do, but then they learn they can do it. It builds on this this confidence in them that as they face harder challenges and harder tasks, that, well, I did this, now I know I can do this. And I think that's an important part.
That's a really important point that you bring up, because not only is it good for the economy to have productive citizens, but it's actually good for them individually. I mean, you think about, what is our purpose here in life? Is our purpose here just to sit on the couch and play video games? Or if we have this artistic ability to paint without any type of accountability as to whether or not that's going to be worth enough to somebody else to pay for our living?
Right.
Our job here in life is to grow our talents. And grow them in a way that we can feel that we have accomplished something. And Christ makes that very clear in the parable of the talents. Now, in the Bible, the talents were actually money. But he said that he gave one talent to one person and two talents to another person and five talents to another. And the people that had two and five doubled theirs. And the person that had one was scared of losing it, so he buried it. When he came time to pay up, he just returned the one. And Christ said that the master of the household said, you know, you're a slothful servant. You didn't do anything with your talent. And so it's going to be taken away from you. It's going to be given to the person that has 10, who doubled his five, because he has been a faithful servant. Now, I think the point is, we are here to magnify our talents. And one good way to do that is to demonstrate that our talents are useful enough to others that we will get compensated for them. We can do things that actually are productive to other people, and they will voluntarily give of their money or trade or do whatever in exchange for the talents that we have developed. So living in society that doesn't have any entitlements but actually rewards those who produce helps you grow as an individual and help society be more productive.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I want to shift our discussion a little bit and talk about immediate gratification. We live in a society where there's immediate gratification, and of course, that is something that actually triggers addiction. That's why substances like cocaine are so addictive, because there's this immediate high. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing it's a high. I don't know if it's a low or it's a high. I don't know. But it's immediate, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And we get this sense that is supposed to be there, that is a natural that's a natural repercussion for life and how we act, that we should get some immediate gratification. But we found through important studies out there that the more we're willing to delay our gratification, the more potential we have to grow, mm-hmm. and develop a solid foundation for characteristics that are going to be productive over the long term. Right. Studying for math is not going to give you an immediate gratification, right?
Correct, right.
For most people.
Right.
Reading novels doesn't give you immediate gratification, especially the classics, right? Mm-hmm. Where that give you real fundamentals of well-run societies. But what else have you learned, whether it's in your own life or from books that you've read, about mm-hmm. delaying gratification and the importance of that?
Yeah, well, there was that famous marshmallow study, I think it was in the 70s,
okay.
where they brought some young children into...
They're five-year-olds.
Five-year-olds, right? They bring them in and they put a marshmallow in front and, okay, we're gonna leave the room and we'll come back, 5 minutes?
Something like that.
Something, a few minutes, and if the marshmallow's still there on the table... we'll give you another marshmallow, right? So all they had to do was sit there and wait a few minutes, and they could double, right? Double their treat. And some kids, within an instant of the adult walking out the door, that marshmallow was in their mouth, right? Mm-hmm. And all the different stages, and there were several kids that were able to wait, and they got their second marshmallow. And they followed these kids to adulthood. And what they found were the kids who waited, were able to withhold and wait for that second marshmallow, were more successful in their careers and in their family life. And so the correlation there is just showing that as we can regulate ourselves and our responses and our impulses, that we can train our bodies, our minds to react in a way that's going to promote growth and success in the future.
So how do you train your kids to value delayed gratification?
Well, let's see. We do payday, so we call it, when we pay out for chores, and it's uh-huh. done monthly. Oh. So we used to pay out weekly, and then I decided that was ridiculous, and so now it's on a monthly basis. So it's fun watching them manage their money for a month, right? Because they're basically living paycheck to paycheck, right?
Can they do whatever they want
with
their money?
Whatever they want, no. When we first pay, they do their donations, and they do savings for a future mission, and they do savings for college, and then they do the rest of that money pretty much is up to them within reason.
So first they pay a charitable amount to the church,
yes.
called the tithing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing they pay out.
That's the first thing, yeah.
And then the next thing is you say a mission.
They save for their mission.
So that's a charitable contribution of their time that they're going to do, but they're going to mm-hmm. pay for that.
They're going to pay for their service, right?
Mm-hmm. And then it's for education.
For education.
And mm-hmm. then?
And then for themselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's pretty great, because if you think about that, that's God.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's community.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's further in yourself.
And then it's self, right.
And mm-hmm. then... ultimately, it's, mm-hmm. okay, what do I have left over?
Right, right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you, Katie. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
By promoting and allowing toxins to be in these highly processed packaged foods, I think that's an appropriate way for the government to disentangle itself from the food industry.
Interesting. I didn't think of it that way. The way I thought of it is he's
imposing more restrictions and
yes.
more, right. Which maybe that is his plan.
Because I don't know. It seems like if you're trying to corrupt or trying to fix a corrupt organization, the way you do it is dismantling the organization, not by imposing different restrictions or different mandates.
Right. Well, in that big, long discourse he gave, I think when he endorsed Trump, right?
Yeah, it was like an hour or nine.
Right. It, throughout watching that, to me, my take was he's looking at getting rid of those conflicts of interest of all the people that are part of food production on the boards, making decisions for what's safe and what's not, what's okay to go in schools and what's not to go in. So if that, I think, is eliminated and it's truly based on science and nutrition, and get out the subsidies that are promoting things that are not good for us and allowing consumers to make a choice in what they're going to consume. But I think that us as consumers are being hoodwinked by the food industry.
So that being said, the troubling thing to me ever since COVID is allowing science to determine, because science is it seems to be constantly changing, and we're supposed to trust the science when the numbers stack up in favor of whatever the political agenda is that day.
True.
But we're supposed to ignore the science if there's any dissident voices out there about the science. And so I think we just trust the consumer. Mm-hmm. Like the very last sentence that you said. Consumers, ultimately, they want what's best for themselves. They want what's best based on time, efficiency,
money. I think money is your number one consumer. If you look at food consumption and what's affordable?
Is it yours?
Is what? My concern with food?
Is it your number one?
When I'm picking food out?
Yes.
No.
Right.
But most people it is.
Why is it your number one?
Why is it not my number one? Yeah. Because I have disposable income that can compensate for the increase that I pay.
Are there alternatives?
For
you to choose from?
Yes.
Like
I can choose lesser. What? Yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you could choose more expensive food, or you could choose food that you trust the labels on.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a little bit of discretionary time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've elected to have that, right? And you've got discretionary income that you've elected to allocate instead of to fancy cars, to good nutrition for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
So if we allowed the consumer to decide whether or not they want to use, I would say that every consumer has discretionary time and income. It's just whether or not they decide to use it.
Okay.
And we're not going to ever have a government that's efficient enough to coerce good policies about micromanaging our lives. And what type of food we eat is exactly that, micromanaging our lives. I wouldn't dream of doing that in my own staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much more close-knit, and I'm much more reliable and responsible than the government is. And I'll just say that, right, in an unbiased way.
Yeah.
But I would not dream of doing that with my staff. And I care about them, and I know what type of income they have because I'm paying their income. But I trust them as adults to make the best decisions that they're going to make for themselves and their children. And that's the cost of freedom. We have this in the back of our mind all the time. Well, if we just implement this one last policy that would solve this issue, then we could get closer to this utopian society that we all dream about. It doesn't exist. It never has existed. It never will exist. Freedom has provided the best opportunity and the best quality of life that we've ever seen. It's also provided the most charitable mindset that we've ever seen in the world. And yes, it does have its downsides. But those downsides are what we call accountability for the decisions that we make.
Interesting.
So I would always put the government at a very steep inclined argument for why they should be involved at all.
Right.
Any decision that we make in our life. And if it's not absolutely necessary, and I mean fundamental to the three pillars of freedom, then I don't think that they should be involved. Certainly.
So are you talking about life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? So those are three pillars?
I am, except okay. With the pursuit of happiness, I would go back to the original drafting of that and it being property.
Okay.
Life, liberty, right. Property. If the government isn't protecting us against the infringement by others on those three pillars,
so you don't think
away.
Food relates to life?
Absolutely does.
Okay.
But I don't think that the government has to get involved in order for me to right. pursue that. So
who's going to dismantle it, right? Like, who's going
right.
to? How?
So
they've already got so many.
I agree with the dismantling. Mm-hmm. I just don't agree with the rearranging or resurrecting.
Right. Yeah. Should be interesting to see what comes of it. What would his plan if elected, right? If Trump's elected and RFK is in that position, what steps he would take first to dismantle and then what would, right? Because after you dismantle, it creates a vacuum. You create a vacuum, something's going to take its place.
Absolutely.
So,
what do you think would take its place
if not the government?
What's going to take its place? What do you think?
If not the government? Well, hopefully a private corporation, but...
Well, we've seen again and again when the government has failed, a private corporation has filled the vacuum. Remember when NASA discontinued in, 2001? I don't know. It was early 2000s.
Right.
We had a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have something that's 100 times, if not 1,000 times, more efficient.
Right.
Providing space travel through Elon Musk and SpaceX. Every time the government steps aside and gets out of the way of the people, the people not only meet the task, but exceed whatever the government attempted to do with unlimited resources.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the basis of an argument to the contrary, with the exception of national defense, and potentially, and I say this potentially, policing, because I also think that cities could hire companies privately to act as their police forces, and they would have a greater influence on exactly how those cities were policed, how safe they were, what type of compensation packages the police received, what type of training the police received, instead of a standardized government-run organization.
Right.
I don't know that to be the fact, and I'm more hesitant to go that far because policing is such a vital, role in protecting our rights from other people taking our property, taking our life, taking our liberties. But I do think that the private sector has the ability basically to fill the gap that we have in any aspect of our everyday life. And that's the libertarian side of me. That is a libertarian view. That's what libertarians think. I don't know that I've ever met like a 100% true libertarian, because also libertarians don't believe in borders. But they also don't believe in government aid for individual, like welfare, entitlement systems. And that, do you think that we'd have people pouring over the southern border in droves if they didn't have the idea that they're going to receive free health care, free housing, that they're going to receive jobs without any consequences? I mean, I don't. Well, my issue with it is me paying for their living.
Mm-hmm.
It's not them coming,
right?
Not at all,
right? Right.
In fact, I encourage them coming. I think that it was interesting to look at the statistics of the last Olympics. It was something to the tune of 20% of the Olympians were actually trained in American universities.
Wow.
They attended, they
amazing.
Lived in America for a long period of time. And that's 20%.
Yeah.
I mean, we make up, I don't know, 5% of the, and I don't even think that. What percent of the population? 3% of the population?
Yeah. I don't know.
Of the world population? World population is 8 billion. What's 330 million divided by 8 billion?
Get your calculator out for that, Sean. I don't know. Almost.
It's
probably, it's, yeah, it's probably
1.5%.
Yeah.
It's less than 1.5%.
Okay.
But we make up 20% of the Olympic athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Because people that are very talented come over here. They see the hope and the dream, right, and the potential that the United States offers, and the United States delivers.
Right, yeah.
But those aren't guys that are taking advantage of entitlement systems.
Mm-hmm.
Those are people that have skills and expertise to offer the world, mm-hmm, and we're enhancing those.
Right, right.
And then providing it back to the world. Now, a lot of them go back to their own countries to participate because, you know, the Olympics has their own rules about how many athletes can participate from a single country.
Right.
Which I think is a bit odd because we always say the Olympics is a demonstration of the best athlete in the world, the best athlete of the countries that provided their athletes. You know, we might have one country that has the best top 10.
Sure.
Of a particular sport. I don't know. Maybe China has the best top 10 badminton players.
Right? It's true. It's true.
Okay, good cut. Next.
Were you recording any of that?
I recorded all of it.
Awesome.
And I got our split screen all going. I'll just run this today. You guys just have your conversation.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to do a welcome, and you could flip this one to be like an opening.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.